Okay, thanks very much for coming, first things. I'm going to talk about 2D art, which is two-dimensional games. Whatever you need to make for your game, whatever assets, that's what I'm going to try and talk. Now, on the first slide right there is a lie, if you look at it, right? Which is this, dun, 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 which is the word artist. Because I don't really think that game art is necessarily an art in the big sense of the word. I think that there's so many constraints in the artistical process that it kind of takes away the art of it. What you need is art skills. You know, like a lot of people used to say that design was an art. I don't think that as well, and I got a design degree. I think that it's social and human science. It's about how you make something. How do you deliberately try and make something? The fact that you're doing art for a game, and someone says, whatever you're making has to fit within 800 pixels by 600 pixels, that sort of takes something out of it. Okay, it cuts something out of what you're doing. It takes away some of your artistic freedom. And there's a lot of artistic skills, right? You need drawing abilities. Like, this is the kind of stuff that I do when I have spare time. Not as much lately, but obviously people kind of change. I got more work, less time to do something. You know, I consider this a little more artistical than the game art, because this has no limits. I just define the size of the canvas and I paint whatever I want, right? There's this kind of stuff. This was inspired by Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. They had those illustrations of people riding bikes in the sunset, and I thought I'd make a Latino girl with a big butt. this is a character that I had, a really old character that I had for an idea that I used to have with the guys that I started making games with, which was True Dimensions, which we have Marcio here, which was one of the original guys in the team. The team split, and two of them, Marcio and Tiago Souza, went to work at Crytek. I stayed in Portugal. There was other guys that went to work at Splash Damage in England. They made Brink. And the other artist, Vitor Martins, is still working right now at Miniclip in Lisbon. And I'm the one who's gone back to the north because I'm from the north, Barcelos. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I used to do when I was in artistical. So I used to be on a lot of forums, but then Facebook came and ruined everything. This is a self-portrait, obviously. This is the screenshot of the game, and this is the gameplay. They tricked you. This is the kind of stuff that I usually do when I'm doing concept design, the kind of rendering that I use, the kind of illustration, which is to do something in black and white, and then when I have the time, I'll go ahead and paint everything on it. This is one of my latest, which is probably about 4 years old, something like that, you know, that I had time to paint. I was happy with the clouds. But I also do a lot of hand drawing. Maybe some of you recognize the guy in the middle. Maybe. This is Nick Cave, also is based on a caricature that I saw modeled out of sculpted, a 3D caricature. And this is a gray paper that I use a black pencil and a white pencil on it. So I basically do the dark stuff first, and then I go in with a white pencil and I put the highlights in, which actually makes it pop quite a lot. It's really cool. So what to expect from this presentation? I've done that already. I'll talk about some of my experience, what has changed over the years. What are the usual methods? I'll try not to read every single word on each PowerPoint slide. What else? Oh yeah, the rest of the list is on this slide. I'll keep providing my personal opinion. I forgot the opinion. And I'll try and leave some time at the end for questions. There's not a lot of text on this PowerPoint presentation, but you know, I didn't want to translate a lot. So this is an image I did for a game that I'm working on with Ben Olding. Is almost coming out for mobile. And this is a background that I painted. I was really happy to do this because there weren't any projects that I was working on that I had the chance to do something like this. And this is kind of, you know, I think I did a streaming on it. It took about an hour to do the main thing and then like an extra hour for details. And then I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I had the night version? That would be awesome. But I didn't want to paint everything over, so I came up with a trick, which I'm going to show you. Now, if you look at the previous image, right? It's fairly dulled down. It's fairly grayish because I wanted the character to really pop out. So when you do a character, you want it to make, like, the character has to be the big thing. The guy that you have to look at the image and instantly see where the character is, because that's how you read the game. This is me. These are my enemies. This is where I have to go, right? So if I made this really contrasting, like this next image, I wouldn't know where the character is, which in this game specifically, the character is always going to be in the middle. And things are going to be thrown at him, okay? So it's actually not a big problem, but it's kind of a mentality. If you do this, it's your method. So you don't really go away from, you know, you don't diverge. In a different project, you don't ruin it, you know? So I came up with a trick to do the night ones, right? This isn't as well as on the screen, but the thing is, I just add lights to it, and I make everything darker. I'm gonna show you how I would do that in Photoshop. So this is the image that you saw early on. I just make a new layer, and I paint that layer, I don't know, blue. Right? This doesn't look like much. Let me bring down the saturation just a little. You can see I have two screens at home. So saturation down. I changed this to multiply, and it's starting to look like something. Okay, it's still very saturated, and it doesn't look as well on the screen, so I'm going to try and fix it here so that it looks okay there. Okay, so lightness. Let me see how that looks. Less saturation. That's about good. So this is kind of not really a night scene because you lack what happens in the night is people turn on the lights. So I go in and I make another layer. I pick up a light color. You can see I use a lot of brushes on Photoshop. So I make this kind of thing. And this pen is pressure sensitive. You've seen this, right? These kind of stuff. These are Wacom tablets. Whoops, I didn't want to say the brand. So you have that, and I'm gonna actually go in and do the light here, okay? So I go in, let's see, a little bit more, a little bit more. I don't wanna take up your time, so I'll just do it really fast and sloppy. And then I'm going and add like a really brighter one. And then I'll have some, you know, some light effects. Like there's gonna be a little bit of light on the ground, a little bit bouncing off here, which I'm gonna use a different brush. No. It's trial and error. Another one up here. So basically you see the concept, right? I look for surfaces that are facing the light, and I paint those in the same color as I want the light to be. So on the ground, I'm actually gonna do this on a different layer. So you have something like this. See? And then I erase part of it, which is supposed to be the shadow of the, maybe this would work. Yeah, something like this, right? And then I duplicate this over to the next side. And I use this. So that's my night scene. Obviously, I put in a little more work when I did the real one. But the process is this one. It takes you about 10 minutes to make multiple versions of the same thing. And then I did the same for the sunset version. And it also worked fairly well. Okay. So this is a different scene that I painted for a game for Mark Loika, which is an American Flash programmer. And this is meant to be one of those Assault the Castle kind of games where you point a rifle, like your rifle, the rifle's on the front of the screen, and there's enemies coming from the left to the right, and you shoot them, and you want it to do like the American embassy in Iraq, because that's, you know, that's something that really sells in America. And you're meant to save the this funny thing is we did the third one. This is the second one. We did the third one with an alien invasion. It wasn't as popular because the alien, you know, I mean, it's an enemy, but it's not really an enemy. Like the Nazis are really an enemy. The terrorists are really an enemy. So it kind of worked differently. I also usually take notes for ideas. This was like the first, the fourth game of this series in which you were inside a house and you could actually duck, and like you can see here, you could duck and protect yourself from the bullets, so you'd be shooting from the window. This would be the inside of the house. This would be the view. And we had a little crease on the hill so that you didn't see the enemies coming from really far, so they would pop up on the crease of the hill. Now, when I'm, you know, if I get a client, this is the best case scenario. The game is made and they want a reskin, right? They just want it to be reskin. And they say, I have like 6 frames for walking, so you can't do more or less. So that's cool because it gives me constraints, right? If you have total freedom, you kind of get lost in the details. But if they put some sort of restraint, which is the great game about the great thing about game art, is that you kind of limit yourself and you have to think things through, right? You can't just go in and make a guy walking. You have to think about, if I only have 6 frames, this would be the normal walking, right? Right leg front, left arm front. So it's the opposite, right? And you walk like this. Well, not really like this, but you know. The odd thing would be if you used the same leg and the same arm in the same direction, you'd look like an idiot because you'd be walking like this, right? and you have some drool going on. Now, now the thing is, they give you that restraining. You think, right, 6 frames. I have to really think about those. If I'm doing this in 3D, because I get jobs for all different kind of stuff, like render 3D, real-time 3D, pixel art. I'm going to show a few pixel art projects. You make the animation, and then you can cut down the frames. But if you have to do it by hand in 2D, you have to each frame, then you have to really think about it. Then they give you an asset list, which is awesome, because you can really see how much it's going to cost. And then they ask you how much is it going to be, and how long is it going to take. And you basically deliver, like, that's the platforms and the character, and you deliver something like that. Now, you just take the concept. You can have it look like whatever you want. This doesn't matter that it's shaped like this, because the characters only be going on there, right? So if I can make, like, a piece that fits, and they make the platform as big as they want, like, this platform actually goes into the background to kind of make the whole thing. You know, you would say, beefy guy on a desert. That's what I want. That's the style I want. You'd be doing something like this. Now, this is the first game that I did with a company from Barcelos, which is my hometown, obviously represented here. And this is Grumpy Dots. We kind of went for a look that was fairly unique, right? They asked me, this is like the good case scenario. They said, we have the game, needs reskin. We don't have an idea for a style. You can suggest one. So that was extra work. That's fine. And then they have, this is the assets list, because the game is done. We know exactly what it needs. How long and how much will it take? So this is what they gave me, right? A screenshot of the game, and this is what I sent them back. 3 ideas for different themes. I can do this fairly quickly, but don't ask for freebies. Like, this was meant to be like a glass effect. This one was actually the one that spawned the idea for the final look. And then you have the sort of the mercury thing, which actually went into being close to what they have for the logo. And then I said, I have another idea. Why don't we put eyes on each of the little guys? And that actually was the original idea, which looks fairly silly because it's done in vector art. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. And then we went for references because they said, wouldn't it be cool if we made it like a vintage poster? And I said, it probably would be very cool. So I did a little bit of research. And we came up with this. This is the final style for the game. Now, there's a paper texture behind it. And the paper texture actually limits me because this is the whitest the game will ever be. I can't have anything white on the screen. And that's weird, okay? That's weird because now you have something that you think looks white but doesn't really look white. Like the eyes, on these are the power-ups. The eyes on the board painter, it can't be on the white background. So the background has to be this color. So the eyes now have to be dark as well. They have to be slightly darker, right? So that's the kind of considerations. All the texture of the paper we had to put in on each of the tiles because I didn't want to break them and make them transparent. That would be weird. We wanted to make it look like the paint was flaking off. And these weren't specifically animated, but the main ones in the game were animated, and they look really cool. Now, there's a difference between what kind of style you use for a game, right? Like, I came dressed with a blazer because, you know, it's Microsoft and I want to look decent. And it was actually a pretty bad idea because I'm really hot. So if you guys don't mind, I'm sorry. Now, but if you have a certain style for your game, now that's going to suggest a different theme. Now, the game, the Grumpy Dots first game, was very unique, very different looking, right? But it suggested some sort of style that we don't know if gamers will recognize or feel like they want to play. So this is Grumpy Dots World, which is the second version. And I went through the effort of actually painting in something more like you would see in one of those King games or Slingo games, you know. Mark Loika did a game for Slingo, and I was the artist for it, so I had a chance to kind of see how they liked stuff. So I went in and did this splash screen, which they liked, and I was actually very happy with it. And I think it has a completely different theme. And we also added customization. You can see that this guy has a cowboy hat now. And so this is the customization, like, for the summer. This is full customized now. It has the swimming glasses, the breathing tube, the bowie, the duck bowie, and the hat, swimming suit. Now, this is the one for the winter level or the snow level in which he's using all the stuff. This is the gradual. And then we thought, they don't look fluffy enough, you know. Now that we're going to do a style that isn't flat style, you know, that it isn't look like a venture project, we could actually put more details. So we came up with these furry kind of guys, right? The three ones are the grumpy ones, and when you select them, they become happy, right? And the eyes go, like, really big. So these I'm more happy with. more happy. Is that no? Now, the thing about style is that you can also go in and actually have a style that defines the gameplay. This is an idea that I have of a game in which the player has ink. He has ink to draw the platforms for the guy to run, and I wanted the guy to look like he was made of ink. So I did the concept at the top, then I went and animated the sketch in Flash, I think, and then I painted each frame on top like it was inked. And this is one of the concept images. Like, you can see the ink bottle up there. Like, if he collides with the drop, the water drop, he gets spread out like a paint blob, and then game over. So that's a different style. Now, this is a game that I did in vector, because I hadn't done any game in vector art, and I thought I could do something vector shaded. And this is a game that we did that was, I don't know if you guys know Cannibalt. And then there's another one called, I don't know, it's a guy with a minigun and he's running and shooting. We tried something like that. So this was John Hawk. We went for the real, like, 80s American hero, but not really hero, like a renegade kind of cliche. And these are the enemies. Like, this one is flipping from one frame to the other because that's the only two frames that he had. This one is spinning. He would come from the top of the screen, go back, shoot you, and then go off again. And that one would fall on the ground. You have to jump over or kill it. And this is a missile that you'd throw. You can see the guns spinning on his hand, right? Because that's his eye is all messed up because he's lost a lot of health. Then you have the roll and the death animations. This was really fun to do, but it's, you know, I have this thing with vector art because it probably me because I don't, maybe I'm not that good at vector art. You know, I can accept that, but I feel more limited. So these were the bosses. We had like a ship like that in different colors, and it would come in, it would shoot this grenade from the top. It would bounce. You could go either under it or shoot it. If you had a shotgun, you could shoot it back to the guy and it would kill it. And this minigun would shoot from the bottom or the top. It would be like one of those like metal slug kind of bosses. And this would be the guy hitting on the checkpoint, because this, if you pass the checkpoint, you would start from there, but it died. So if you jump too high, the banana, if you shot it, it would split and you would slide on it and you wouldn't be able to shoot. And I did all the sound effects because I did it like metal slug. If you got the machine gun, you would hear something like machine gun. You know, the kind of effect that they had, shotgun. And if you ate the banana, you heard banana as well. Oops. Okay, so what we didn't see it. This is the collision, right? This is where you can shoot the guy. And this is the when he collides with you, right? So that's the death. This is when you got the crate with the weapons. This is where you shot it to open it. So this is another game. I didn't make this, but you guys probably know. I won't say the name for, you know, reasons. But this is very popular, and I think it's one of the coolest looking games out there. It's vector art, and I think it works really cool. But one of the things that people use to defend vector art is that you can make it as big as you want. It'll always have good resolution, and that's true. That's fine, and I accept that. The thing is, people tend to confuse with having good resolution with looking good, and that's a different thing, right? If you scale it up to be the size of a building, it will still look good. Now, I can dispute that, because this guy, if you scale it up, it will turn out something like that. Obviously, the edges will be perfect, right? But there's no eyes, there's no mouth, there's, you know, because it was done for that specific size. Now, if you have a specific size that you're going to work on, and you're going to do your vector art or your pixel art for that size, then you don't need to make it bigger. I mean, the thing about video games is that you don't make things so they can be big as you want. You make them as small as you can so that the file size is small, so that the image doesn't take up a lot of memory. You're always working on the smallest thing. But again, it might just be me that I'm not that good at vector art, so I tend to get away from it, right? So here's the worst case scenario, which is I want to make a game, I need you to make the art. You have total freedom. That's a lie. That's usually a lie, right? I have an idea of what I'll need because it's still coming up with a game, which means the double the work will pop up. And then can you give me a fixed price, which is really unfair for a game that hasn't been decided yet. So this was one of the games that I did while I was working at RTS, or eWorks, one of the first Portuguese companies. That's the concept art that the guy approved from Tiago Pimentel, which is a Portuguese game artist as well. And this is the final size that we could make him in. So that's completely different. But the guy wanted something manga because he thought manga was kind of cool. The guy wasn't a game producer. He had this idea for a game and he wanted to show some investors. And he says, it has to be on a Game Boy Advance so I can play them, so they can play it on their hands, you know? And then we said, why not make it, back then it was Virtuals or, Virtuals, and we could play that on an Xbox. You could export that on an Xbox. And he went like, oh, really? I didn't know. And we thought, you don't know anything about games. Why are you making a game? So this guy here, that's how actually he looks like in pixels. You see the nose is one pixel. And this was back when I was doing a lot of pixel art, and I was having a kick doing it. It was awesome. Now, when we came up with this, like, that was my first idea. The guy didn't like it, so he thought he looked like a gigolo. And that was sort of my purpose. You know, he has long hair on the back, a goatee. You know, he's meant to look a little smartass. Then I made the second one, and I thought the head isn't big enough. Like, if you think back to the Final Fantasy kind of video games, the head was big because that was the thing that you used to make the character different from the other one, right? Because you had some little space that you had to use it to make it really different. And this is the final guy, the badass guy. I don't know, but you can see that I predicted the fashion of shaving your head right there and having loads of hair. I predicted that in 2003. I should get some money. Now, these are the concept arts for the enemies after we decided on the proportions, after we decided that the heads are going to be big and the bodies are going to be small, right? And then he wanted me to do the concepts for the animations, like the short-range guy would be running after you all the time, so he would have to stop and breathe. This would be the main frame of him breathing, like, ugh. And this would be the cold cock animation. You can see the little tear and the eyes popping off. And these are the animations that I actually had the pleasure to do. This guy is eating chocolate, and that guy is breathing. If you look, like when he does the, right, the there's more bright pixels there to just suggest that it's bigger, because if it's 4 pixels, it can't be bigger than 4 pixels. So you have to make it brighter so it stands out more, so it looks bigger. And then I did my own projects using sort of the same idea of pixel art. Well, this guy was meant to be able to walk and shoot the shotgun at the same time, which means he could shoot the shotgun at any walking frame, which meant that I had to do this effect of light at every frame, and I didn't want to do that. So I did one graphic of just the light that I overlaid, and I took care not to do it on the legs so that he could shoot whenever. And the guy getting shocked was just a different frame that you would flash in between. If you notice, he's also wearing All-Stars, but that's my personal thing. Now, this is the map of the game. This was a dungeon crawler. And you can see that we did everything with these tiles. Tiles you probably have heard of are pieces that you can put together, or like puzzle pieces that you put together to sort of make a bigger world. It saves you a lot of memory. So we had that tile system, and then we took those same tiles and we changed them a little bit, and we made all the other levels, which is just these three themes. The game was huge. It wasn't a big success for us financially, but there's a lot of people playing it online, and a lot of people, because it was a very long game, it had loads of levels, people really put effort into it. So this again is a tile system, right? 30 tiles, and you can make this. This was a challenge back in pixelation.org forum. So, you know, you have the limitations of, you couldn't even flip things around. So they said it's unflippable. It's just a challenge. And this is one of the processes where you start with a basic shape and you gradually add more and more color. So you can see that then it becomes like a stone model. This is mine. The background is mine as well. This is mine. This is Kenneth Feher. And this is Panda Guy, which names I don't know, but I know the nickname. And there's one missing from Foo Kitty, which is a girl that used to do pixel art as well, and she was really good at it. This is her, right? I did this as a tribute. This piece here doesn't have dithering. You know what dithering is? It's this sort of pattern, so you can flip from one color to the other. This one has dithering, and this one doesn't, right? The colors are mainly put there. This was for an idea that I had for really old cell phone games with Java. I did those in pixel art because, you know, you have such limited space. You want to make sure every pixel looks exactly like you want it. And this would be the process. I would draw the thing. It's pretty similar to what Filipina showed earlier, right? You draw something, and then you go and do the line art. You shade it, and then you finish it up. I'm trying to speed through these because I'm not sure how long I have. So this was my first game with Ben Olding, which has done a few games that I've been a part of. Async Races is a game where you can race with people. They're not racing, but their ghost is. So you're always racing against someone. You see their ghost cars. So there's no collisions, but you try to beat their best times. As you can see, the cars on the bottom, they were drawn. There's just one frame for each car, right? One image. And it spins around when you drive. Now the tiles, like for example, I couldn't rotate this tile because the shadow would be different,
right?
Or this piece here has the shadow going down. If I rotated this to the side, the shadow would point that way. So I made different versions for all these. This one, not. This one, yes, because again, of the shadow. So I had to, it was a decision that I took. It was a stupid decision because it meant more work, but I took that decision because it was not that much more work. And this is the concept of tiles using for scenery, right? With those five tiles, I make all these buildings. This is also for a project that I have that I haven't been able to finish. No one wants to do it. It's awesome, but no one wants to do it because it's so much work. And this was Hajime, which was my a ripoff that we did of Advanced Wars. And this was one of the things that I sort of thought, I want to make a big game. I don't want to make a big new game. I want to make a big game, and I'm going to use a concept that already exists so that I don't have to work one out for myself and see how that works. So we simplified Advanced Wars a little bit. We made that game. So this map is made with all these tiles, just these eight tiles. And these are all the water tiles that I had. Why? Because I couldn't rotate this 90 degrees because of the thickness of the dirt, right? This couldn't be the bottom one. It had to be a different one, which is here. No, this has the little corner. So this is, it's so annoying to work, this one. It's so annoying to work with all this stuff because there's a lot of little details that you have to work out. And then you have isometric games. This was for a guy that was a really pain in the ass to work with. He was really annoying. And we ended up saying, listen, we're over. You can't use this. You don't need to pay us, but you can't use this. Forget about it. And this is a game that I think he was doing like XCOM style of game. I never played it. I don't know if I'm going to get shot, but it had all those styles. Again, the roads I couldn't rotate this because they had this sort of shadow. So I had to do them all by hand. So that just so you know what kind of guy he was, let's make the tiles 32 by 64, right? Double the length and half the height so that it becomes an isometric square. And they said, what if you make him double the size? I already did this. I think it'll look better bigger. So I had to go in and do everything, double the size, really pain in the ass. He tried and said, it doesn't look that good. Can we make him smaller again? And that's when I said, listen, this is ridiculous. So now you have different tiles, like there's a barrel here of smashed cars, some crates. And like this was the main dirt tile, and this was the main grass tile, and you would populate the world with these, and you would make a huge world just with these tiles. Some of them went off the limits, like this and this, so that they would be in front of the next tile, right? And these aren't pixel art, these are actually painted. These are also painted for, this was for Ben Olding, which is also the guy from Async Racing. He wants to do an isometric engine, and I provided these. These were a kick to make. These were awesome, and I had a live stream of me painting those. I think it's probably deleted now because they have like 40 days, and I forgot to save it. But I can do it again, just to post it online because I don't mind people learning. So that's the final size. That's what they look big. It's okay. They're never going to be that big, right? They're always going to be that size, so they look fine. And the same concept of tiles you can apply to a character, right? This is the guy from Absolute Ninja. You remember that first scenery that I painted, the night version? That's the guy from there, right? Again, because I don't want to have problems with the light, there's light coming from both sides. So if the player like is fighting this side, the light is here. So if he flips from that side, the light is still here. If the light was there and he flipped to that side, the sun would move with him, which would be weird. Let me show you the guy animated. Is it this? No, this is a different thing. Again, sorry for that. Let's just go back up. So this is the guy, right? This is all he did. He did these kicks. This was animated in Flash, and I hated it. Because like in Flash, if you do, let's say you want to do this, right? So this is the father, this is the son. If you move this one should move. In Flash, it doesn't happen. Also, it moves in an arc. You put the pivot point here, so it rotates like that. That's awesome. But this one moves in a line, so the forearm would actually move like this instead of doing the perfect arc. Unity came and fixed everything, right? So we tried to put this on a mobile device. It didn't work because it used a lot of memory. So we actually had to go in again. Oh no, I stopped this. Where was I? I was here. So this is what we ended up having to do, a sprite sheet with all the frames of the guy. There's still some space here. This is a 2048 by 2048 pixel image, like huge. But we managed to get it in there. So you can see the different frames. It would be a pain for me to do this, like every single frame. So even if I had to provide something like this for the client, I would probably first do it in, well, not Flash anymore, Unity, and then took snapshots of it, right? Because that would be so much better for me. And it would still look fairly good. I mean, it looks like I painted them, right? So this is another game from Ben Olding, which is Achilles 2. And I hate the proportions on this guy, but it's not my idea. I was limited because he said, I want to use Achilles 1 and make Achilles 2. So if his arm is this long, the new arm is going to have to be this long because I don't want to have to redo all the animations because the guy did all the animations. So I was stuck with this and I thought, it looks terrible. It looks like, well, I don't want to say that midget people look weird, but it looks like a midget. And he said, well, that's kind of my style. People kind of recognize that as my style, the little legs kind of guy. So I had the backgrounds and also did the background. This is the main background. Like this is all done. But it's separated in the sky, the background. Then you have some mid-ground elements. Then you have the main gameplay area. And then some foreground elements, because the pacing of the game is fairly slow, right? He moves fairly slow. And I think he moves, I don't have the demo here, but he kind of moves weird because the guy, the programmer, did the animations. And so the game was moving fairly slow. So I said, let's put a foreground plane that moves faster because of the parallax effect, right? You guys know the parallax effect? So that moves faster, you get a sense of more speed. And he thought, yeah, that's okay. Now the different elements, like the knives and the swords, you just attach that to the arm, and whenever he does a slash, whatever weapon he has will do the same animation, so that's cool. And you can do that in Unity as well. Not doesn't have to be, because this is a Flash game. So this is the original Achilles. I chose this screenshot because it's really bizarre. Congratulations, you put a knife through a guy's head. And then you have, so this is an original proportion, and this is the boss, like the main boss. It's the same guy scaled up with different graphics, right? Same animations, everything. You can use whatever animations he wants. And this is the other levels that I ended up doing. You can see the problem with, oh, let me show you something. You see the shading on the arm and on the armor? Again, the light is coming from here, so that if it flips, it doesn't have a problem. Now, if you look at the boss here, look at his arm. Like the triceps are, it's really awkward pose because that's how the animation was built, because there wasn't any shading before, so whatever he did, it just had like a beige shape, and that would be fine. So this is a new guy that I'm working on. It's one of the things that I'm gonna do with guys from InDot, which is to make this little guy. And this is an astronaut, has a jackpot, and jumps on through different platforms. And I'm gonna show you what it looks like in Unity. So this is the guy. As you can see, he's made up with different pieces. Like this is move. Like this is the head. Ah, this is weird. But you see, it's all separated. Now, the animation here is done by different pieces, right? So there's little parts of the body, and I can change it. This is the idle animation when he's waiting for something to happen. Let me just deselect that guy. Okay, so that's a fairly long animation, but it doesn't use all those many frames, right? These are all the keyframes, and this is, it looks fluid. It didn't take like 600 frames for me to do something so fluid. This is the jump animation. When he jumps, he goes upward, basically. It's not one of those arc jumps. He goes up and then he ends the jump, but that's a different animation. But you can see on the helmet, for example, if I scrub the animation, on the helmet I made the graphics change, so it looks like he's going through something. And I made the jetpacks also sort of flash, so it looks like this, right? And the engines are going like they're really letting off enormous power. And then there's the land animation, which is when he gets to the top of the jump, he goes like, let's say I'm at the top, and I just go like this, right? This is just the end of the animation. And it's something like this. Oof, see? because it's a loop, it looks weird, but it just goes up and then lands. Let me try and scrub that. So it goes up, gets its pose back, and then the things, you see that little, the engines animating afterwards? That's what people usually call secondary animation. That just adds a little more subtleties. Then you have the fuel filling, which when he's on a special platform, the fuel pumps up, so it's just the, and his hands are trembling because the hands are on the thing that actually sets off the, and he's kind of scared. And this is the my favorite one, which is the death animation, right? So this is a visor. If he hits his head, the visor breaks, and you can pretty much see what happens. His head just, you know, like notice the little bone there. I really like this one. Okay. So, right. So this is me doing a concept. This is for Mars, who's going to start a game. And he specifically asked me, I want a sexy female warrior type thing. So I had to go with big breasts, obviously. And then I did the concepts, and this is pretty much the process. Once I was happy with this silhouette, because it's pretty much about the silhouette when you design something. When I was happy with this, I went in and started perfecting everything, do the line work again, shading it, removing the line work, right? Because that would be a different style, and I didn't want to go for that style, but this is also a cool style. Then when you like Borderlands, you guys know that one? It's cartoon shaded, it has an outline, it looks really cool. So I then add the color. I use the front as a reference to draw the side view. This is a model sheet. If I was to do this in 3D, I would use this as a model sheet. And then I use that as a scale to make the enemies, the pose of the enemy, another enemy. And from that, I can pretty much go in and do all the different pieces. I had three different torsos because I wanted the breast to shake, but that didn't work. It looked really, because they did this, you know? So that was really weird. And, now, like the arm of the guy, I really took the care of doing the same thing. Always do the same thing with a light. I sometimes do a rim light. Like if there's a moonlight, I would go and put a light on the edge. That also looks really cool. And this is when you start doing something like this, which is digital painting. And then you have sort of digital illustration, which isn't really painting, but it's kind of like it, right? You use whatever you want to do to give volume to stuff. And this is fairly easy to do. It's a bunch of layers on Photoshop. In this case, it was like two layers, one layer with the ball and another one with the arrows. This is a game I did with my first game company, VGS. And this is me and Ricardo Vladimir, who works at Miniclip now. He's a game producer. And you would pop one and some would go off and they would pop the other ones and you would have to clear the levels. It's a chain reaction kind of game. So this was the first game that I did with him, which was Balloon Bliss. It's a match three kind of game where you pop balloons and then you would have different trophies. Like, I'm still really happy with how this came out. And this is painted in Photoshop, right? And I can show you kind of like what it is to do something like that. So I start off with a selection, like a square selection in a new layer, obviously. I flip it around 45 degrees, crop the top off. So there's a diamond right there, right? Let me move this up so you guys in the back can see. Now I want this blue. Let me lock the transparency. So this is kind of just the basic shading, like it would be really bright on the inside. And now I do a selection like this. And this is sort of my, like the facets on the diamond, right? I can hide this. I'm not taking the selection away, I'm hiding it. And if I go on to the, like this panel, ring the light us up, right? The shapes of the diamond are showing up, right? Now I can see facets. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to hand paint them with the colors I want, right? So this would be white. And I'm going to do the same thing for the bottom here. And I can add selection to this. Again, let me do some white there, right? And I mean, it takes some time, but if you really put some effort into it, you can actually start and understand how things reflect, and that becomes like your main tool. Now that doesn't look good. Maybe this color. It's weird to paint when I'm looking at the other side. You know, something like this. I mean, if I had more time, I'd do something better, but right? And then you can have like something like this. Nope, it doesn't look good. Nah, I'll just leave it like this for now. But you can see it's pretty much just using very rudimentary techniques to sort of illustrate that. This is why it's so important to actually draw in real life, like with a pencil, because it forces you to look at something and understand how you can represent it. And then you come into Photoshop and you do something really simple, like using a bunch of tools. Now, the game was made with a customization thing. We wanted people to have a profile that was built out of these faces. I think I lost one face here. Out of these faces, and then we had a base color for this. This was just like to make the cheeks rosy. And then we had some shirts. We had the guy, and then we had the girl. These are the graphics when I didn't have the girl. So I gave eyelashes and lipstick to the boy and boobs. So that, and a ponytail, just so we didn't have the graphics, so that the programmer had something to do. And the story would be something that I would paint in and then shade it differently, and this would be the main area, the first area. You have a map. And this is, again, the programmer said, I have this idea, do you want to work with me? And the idea was actually really cool, I wanted to. So I said, it's inside a house, you're defending the house from zombies. So you have like something where you fix a radio to call for help, but then you have to go on and shoot the zombies at the bottom. This was the test for the character. How big would it be and how would it look? Because the character is actually 3D, but the scene, the main scene is 2D. So let me show you how it looks right now. It's this one. Now I can show you. Hello? Okay, there we go. So the guy is fixing the radio, but if he has to go, he goes down the stairs to kill the zombies. Whenever he goes into a room, the room lights up. It's a different image. And he shoots, he walks that way, shoots there. He fixed the door here, fixes the door there, and he can go for more wood and to light back, put the light back up because there's a thunderstorm, the light goes down. And if the light goes down, he can't fix the radio. So it's like a tasking game, like the multitasking game. So the character is done in 3D because I knew I had to do a lot of animations from a lot of angles, so I didn't want to do that in 2D because that would be a lot of work. But the house, I thought I can only do this to look as good as I want it to look if I actually go in and hand paint everything. Right, and what we came up with was this. Now, there's a lot of, it doesn't look that good. Wait, I can save this. Okay, cheap trick. So this is the house, like this is the office and the kitchen, living room, bedroom, attic. This is the basement, you can see the electric board now. And the wood that he comes to get, he gets another plank of wood to fix the door. And this is the office without light and with light. I just came up with an idea that he's a writer, so these are the movie posters that he did, and that's his office. I don't know where the reflection on the screen is coming from because there's no light, but it looks cool. It helps to sell the idea that it's a computer screen. What else? Okay, so this was the second game that we started to do for Big Fish Games, was a casual game. And as you can see, the style here is completely cute and cuddly and cartoony, right? And I did this on purpose. If you think about the first guy that you saw talking here with a blazer and a shirt, and now the guy is wearing a t-shirt and the leather wrist thing, the style changes, no? I'm the same person, but what I'm saying might be perceived a different way because of how I'm dressed. Let's not be hypocrites. Obviously, the way people dress matters, right? And this is how you dress your game. This is the clothing for your game. And it affects different people differently. Now, this was clearly meant for what we call as the soccer moms. Right, the American mother who plays video games, who pays $25 to play this video game, which is a very simple game. And I hate this kind of like cliches, but it is true. That's what they actually say. It's for the soccer mom. So you have to do something that you feel is going to appeal to women, which is ridiculous because anything can appeal to anyone. But they sort of say, make it cute, like with animals, and the text has to have gradients. So you kind of have to go through and sell that image. On the top there, this is the chimney. If you got a power-up, like if you break the pieces, they would fall here. They would go through the tube into the bucket, go up. This would fill up. And once it filled up, it gave you something. I think it would make drop for power-ups. But this would go like, right? And those are the frames. So it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7, 8, 7, 8, 7, 8, 7, 8 for a while. It would be between those two so that it would have this sort of flickering effect. I don't have the original graphics with me. Otherwise, I would do the animation. So, questions? Now, yes.
Do you usually work with people that tell you example, they don't know how to work on art or on drawing like you do, but they point out a lot of things that you know that won't work, and they tell you to do a lot of things that you know that are not going to work. How do you deal with that?
It does happen, and it's usually a matter of actually going in and say that won't work, and you have to present them with an alternative or with an example. That won't work because, like the original game that you saw with the Game Boy, with the little guys, the thing was he wanted something that we couldn't achieve on the Game Boy. It was impossible. Technically, it was impossible. He wanted to have like clouds with different transparencies. We said, it doesn't work like that. There's only four levels of transparency on a Game Boy. You can't do it, right? And he was like, but people do it. No, they don't. I mean, if you see something like that, that was painted, and it's a background. It's static. It doesn't move. Which is true, that's how they do on some RPG games. They have some incredible light effects, but that was painted. And it's a static image, it doesn't move at all. And you have to go in and actually, it's usually by example, right? You say, well, great, how would you do it? And they would, well, I don't know, but you're the artist. You say, yes, exactly, that's why I'm telling you it won't work. It does happen, yeah. Anyone else? Layer-based. I usually do a selection when I'm doing something really fast. I rather make a selection, but fill it in on a different layer so I can go back. And once I discover the block transparency feature, which I learned from, Steven Stahlberg was a Swedish artist. Like this thing here,
yeah.
Like if you don't have it on, you can paint outside, but if you have it on, you can only paint inside. This is like a lifesaver. And then I found out what the hotkey was for it, and I even posted it on Facebook because I was really happy, which is the forward slash. You click it and it flips. So now I'm working, and I'm using all the shortcuts I know on Photoshop, and that was like the main thing. But yeah, most of the time, a shape alone on a layer. Yeah. Anyone else? Podem perguntar em português, preferirem também, não é por aí que... Sim.
Como é que tu vês a proteção do estilo do artista e do trabalho do artista no meio que começa a
sair? Eu acho que, por exemplo, um dos artistas que eu sempre admirei, que morreu há pouco tempo, que era o Paul Steed, que trabalhou na ID Software, e eu na altura era completamente viciado em low poly. O mínimo de polígonos que eu pudesse pôr num personagem, mais contente eu ficava, que era uma espécie de desafio pessoal. E eu acho que ele tinha um jeito incrível para conseguir ir buscar a silhueta do modelo dentro do orçamento que lhe tinham dado de polígonos. Percebes? E eu achava aquele trabalho incrível. O que geralmente acontece é que há uma batalha. Eu lembro-me de trabalhar também com um tipo em que nós tínhamos 1.200 polígonos para fazer um modelo e ele só conseguiu fazer com 1.600. E teve lá a meia hora a dizer, pá, mas tem que ser assim porque senão o gajo perde a personalidade, senão aquilo perde o estilo. Não é? Então aí o produtor tem que dizer, ok, vamos pôr menos uma árvore ou duas no jogo, mas o principal fica um bocadinho mais bonito. E acho que isso é uma batalha que tem que ser travada com o diretor artístico, caso exista. Os projetos em que eu trabalho geralmente são projetos pequenos. Estamos a falar de jogos flash, mobile e alguns casual games que eu trabalhei no início de carreira, mas geralmente são jogos de escala pequena em que eu sou o principal artista, onde é muito fácil a manter um estilo, porque sou sempre eu. Nesse caso, em que já há um diretor artístico, essa discussão tem que ser também puxada por ele.
Como é que eu mantenho este estilo? Como é que eu mantenho diferente?
Eu geralmente tento não ter estilo. Eu formei-me em design industrial. Havia uma coisa que era ter um estilo, acaba por te limitar um bocadinho. Porque depois, se alguém te pedir um trabalho para uma determinada coisa, tu não consegues fazer esse estilo. Como, por exemplo, este Tiago Pimentel era muito bom a fazer manga, mas se a gente lhe pedisse uma coisa mais de ilustração clássica, ele já tinha alguma dificuldade. Eu acredito que o pessoal que tem mais estilo até é o pessoal que arranja mais trabalho, porque são exatamente recortados pelo estilo que têm. Percebes? Por exemplo, o João Madureira, coisas assim. Toda a gente acha o estilo deles altamente. Por exemplo, aquele ilustrador que o Filipina falou, o trabalho dele é incrível. Aquilo é absolutamente delicioso estar a ver. E acho que exatamente ele foi recrutado por causa de ter esse estilo. E eu, como não tenho um estilo muito carregado, há traços que eu tenho, que são tendenciosos de um personagem para o outro. Talvez, por exemplo, o Aquiles e aquele jogo dos ninjas que eu mostrei com eles às peças, há ali uma paridade, a diferença é principalmente nas proporções, mas eu acho que se tu tens um estilo muito forte, e se é isso que diferencia, acho que deve haver um certo espírito de luta do artista para manter esse, digamos, esse pódio, não é? essa espécie de elemento diferenciador. Por exemplo, o Limbo é um jogo lindíssimo, porque é quase, é trabalho de um artista só, é muito unificado e é um estilo absolutamente incrível, por exemplo. O Machinarium, também um jogo muito castiço, desenhado ao lápis e pintado tipo com aguarela assim. É muito bonito. Mais perguntas? Sim?
O que recomendas a pessoal que está a começar a iniciar em arte digital? Recomendas que sejam primeiro muito bons na parte de desenho analógico e depois passem para o digital? Podem já começar a
ver? Sim, há um ilustrador que eu gosto bastante, que é o Bobby Chiu, acho eu, que é um, não sei se é coreano, que é o gajo que diz para a gente acordar uma hora mais cedo e desenhar durante meia hora para começar bem o dia. E ele tem, ele só faz coisas em digital. Já não, ele diz, eu já estou demasiado mimado com o Ctrl Z. Eu não consigo fazer nada em papel porque me chateia. Ah, tenho que apagar, ficou mal. E eu acredito que se tu usares, por exemplo, uma peça deste género, uma caneta digital, consegues na mesma ir gradualmente evoluindo o teu desenho. Agora, como a gente não está sempre ao computador, o que eu aconselho é ter sempre um sketchbook. E o sketchbook é que vai dando aquela desenho. Depois é sempre bom a gente limitar a ferramenta. Por exemplo, se a gente só tem um lápis, que tem uma cor, nós depois temos que, digamos, interpretar aquilo que estamos a ver de uma forma diferente, não é? Em termos de valor e não em termos de cor, por exemplo. Mas sim, aconselho que o pessoal experimente as duas coisas gradualmente. É sempre que pudesse fazer uma coisa digital, acompanhá-la com o tradicional, é sempre castiço. É assim, eu quando fui contactado pelo pessoal da Indot para fazer um jogo, de quem estava na sala, eu era que tinha feito mais jogos até ali, eles estavam a fazer o primeiro. Eu achei que eles tomaram uma decisão muito inteligente, que foi de não tentar inventar a roda. Vamos pegar numa fórmula que nós sabemos como é que se faz e vamos trabalhar a partir daí, vamos aprender as metodologias e quando formos muito bons a tiver um entrosamento entre a equipa é que vamos partir para novas aventuras, que acho que é, se calhar, a decisão mais sensata. No caso do artista, eu diria a mesma coisa. Eu diria que tu deves começar por exemplo, fazer reskins a jogos. Há algumas competições de reskin, até do pessoal da Flash Game License, um portal de jogos em Flash, em que tens, por exemplo, um Arkanoid funcional em que tu podes simplesmente modificar os gráficos. Isso é sempre muito castiço para tu veres o que é que acontece. Por exemplo, nos tiles, se tu fizeres e editares um tile para ter o aspecto que tu queres e depois pões no jogo e de repente o tile é utilizado para outra coisa que tu não estavas à espera, não é? Tu mudas um bocadinho a tua percepção. Por exemplo, quando a gente tem um tile de relva só para fazer um mapa, e vou pôr aqui uma flor, porque fica mais castiço. E depois vai fazer um mapa e há uma flor em todos os tiles, saber? E tu, ah, ok, pronto, não há flor para ninguém, estás a perceber? O máximo que posso fazer é adicionar um tile extra, se houver espaço em memória, por exemplo. Mas geralmente tem a ver com tu começares, baby steps mesmo, começas do nada quase e vais adicionando técnicas ao teu projeto. Mais alguém? Sim? Nos tiles, geralmente, se eu tiver que os fazer à mão, se tiver que fazer o tile map eu à mão, por exemplo, no Photoshop, e eu tento encostar tiles que são semelhantes, estás a perceber? Imagina que tenho um tile de relva e um tile que é de relva e depois água. Eu encosto o de relva com água ao da relva e se houver bleeding, é um bleeding mais ou menos da mesma cor, estás a perceber? Agora, eu desde que, por exemplo, há um software que é o Texture Packer, que desde que eu instalei, a minha vida mudou, por exemplo. Porque eles exportam ficheiro com as definições todas, com tudo no sítio, se eu acrescentar mais um tile, ele muda-os de sítio para caberem todos dentro da imagem, mas grava-me aquilo tudo no XML que o programador consegue interpretar e é direto. E ele próprio nas definições tem lá Prevent Bleeding e tu podes adicionar espaço só. Estás a perceber? Agora, fazer isso à mão é mais difícil do que controlar esse espaço.
Mas esse espaço que adiciona é um espaço transparente?
É um espaço transparente. É um espaço transparente, mas também tens a versão em que ele pega nos pixels do limite e os duplica. Um ou dois pixels, que é para se houver bleeding, há um bleeding dentro da mesma cor. Quem é que estava ali a levantar? Desculpa, é que ele já tinha. Diz. Alguma animação, sim. 3D ou Flash ou Unity. Dependendo da animação que é, eu posso usar o Flash. O Flash tem um sistema de animação que eu já conheço, eu já fui professor de multimédia, já tive que dar formação em Flash e já sei mais ou menos o que é que eu consigo fazer com aquilo. Agora, estas novas ferramentas de animação do Unity são, pá, bem mais giras. Eu não sei se consigo aqui num instantinho, só, por exemplo, aqui, chegar aqui com o botão do lado direito, Create New Clip, blá, blá, blá. E agora tenho, e agora tenho aqui o gajo, vou fazer record. E chego, por exemplo, aqui, rotate, rodo isto. Ele tem aqui uma keyframe, cá em baixo, certo? Eu vou aqui à frente, rodo outra vez. E se escolher, por exemplo, o braço e rodar o braço, reparem, aliás, enganei-me, não é este braço, é o outro. Pode ser o torso. Reparem que se eu mover o torso, vai tudo atrás. Ou se eu mover, por exemplo, a coxa, vai a perna atrás também. Isto é uma das features que é... Já agora podemos ver o que é que acontece. Uau! Ok. Isto é um bocadinho melhor que eu tinha no Flash. O Flash tem um sistema de ossos, mas só funciona com formas quebradas, formas que não são grupos, que é um bocado chato. E eu aqui, gosto, por acaso, gostei mais disto. Estas animações todas que vocês viram foram feitas em 3 horas na primeira vez que eu usei o software. É claro que parte da dificuldade, eu já animar mais ou menos já sabia, mas no Unity não. Tive que ir à net, pesquisar um bocadinho, pá, depois isto é porreiro que exporta para tudo e mais alguma coisa. E pronto, e salva-se montes de memória em animações que são só posição, rotação e escala. Tem a ver também com alguns dos clientes que eu tenho angariado, de certa forma, o que é que eles estão a usar. Alguns ainda usam Flash, outros estão a começar a usar Unity. E eu posso testar até as coisas aqui. Há dias estávamos, por exemplo, a calibrar as cores dos dots que vocês viram, aqueles vermelhos felpudos, e eu usei o Unity no meu computador para calibrar a cor e depois passei os valores RGBs ao programador, que simplesmente os implementou na versão dele. Okay. E é usar a mesma ferramenta. Não, eu sou um bocado reticente a experimentar software novo, porque eu começo a ficar muito bom num determinado software e depois começo a pensar no trabalho que eu vou ter em ficar tão bom com um software novo que vem aí. E começo a ficar um bocado... este aqui foi o pessoal a dizer, pá, experimenta, que é muito bom, experimenta. E eu experimentei e, por acaso, achei piada. Portanto, se calhar devia experimentar os outros também, que me tenham nada a dizer. Desculpa, diz. Sim, há aqui muitas coisas que ainda estão por limar. Por exemplo, saiu há uns tempos um update que resolvia uma série de bugs que o pessoal achava que era suposto funcionar, e não me lembro bem o que era, mas isto não dá porque de repente vem, ah, era um bug, coisas assim, mas é claro que está sempre em evolução.
Sim.
Diz, desculpa. Sim. Sim. Neste caso estou a fazer um bocado de freelancing por opção própria, disfarçado de não arranjar nenhuma empresa no Norte capaz de albergar, ok? Porque neste momento as grandes empresas estão espalhadas um bocado pelo país, mas de certa forma aqui em baixo, em Lisboa. Há umas quantas em Coimbra, acho que há uma ou duas em Coimbra. Há Aveiro, acho que já há qualquer coisa em Braga, mas não tenho certeza. Braga é relativamente perto, sei que vai haver no Porto, especificamente até em Matosinhos. Sei que há, as principais estão cá em baixo em Lisboa, e eu entretanto... Estou casado e tenho uma miúda, não me posso estar a mudar agora de sítio, e então opto por ter esta opção do freelance e eventualmente fazendo alguma coisa. Não, é assim, eu já trabalhei com a eWork Studios, foi uma das primeiras aqui de Lisboa, que depois se repartiu na RTS e na Ignite Games, e depois eu trabalhei na RTS como diretor artístico durante também, acho que foi meio ano, e depois voltei para o Norte, mas trabalhei com eles na mesma. Não, aí era mesmo trabalhador, trabalhar com eles. Eu espero que Pedro Costa não ouça isto, mas trabalhar na RTS era um bocado chato, porque eu era diretor artístico de estatuto só, porque basicamente quem fazia a direção artística era ele. Ele chegava e dizia, não, eu queria a relva mais verde. Mas... Porque ele era micromanager. E nós tínhamos... Havia até uma piada interna que era relvinha, a cor da relvinha, aquele verde, que ele era muito obcecado com isso. Então o que eu basicamente fazia era a gestão da arte, era quem é que artista é que vai estar a fazer o quê. Nós éramos 4 artistas lá. Que artista é que está a fazer o quê? Chegamos a ser 5 até. E estabelecer prazos, estabelecer métodos, vamos fazer isto em 3D porque é mais rápido ou porque fica melhor para aquilo que a gente quer ou coisa assim. Tomar essas decisões. E depois, tipo, o estilo do jogo era quase sempre ele que decidia. Uma cena bem cute and cuddly, porque era o que ele achava que as mulheres iam comprar por causa da história dos jogos casuais, aquilo que estava a falar das soccer moms. E isso, pronto, essa decisão era da parte dele. Alguns dos jogos que saíram não saíram com o look que eu queria. No caso da VGS, que foi uma empresa que eu fundei com o Ricardo Vladimir, aí eu era o único artista. Tinha total liberdade, dessa vez, por isso é que eu pus 99,9%, porque eu vi 0,1% em que realmente tinha a liberdade total para fazer o que queria. No caso do freelance, há mais liberdade um bocadinho, porque geralmente o pessoal quando vai à procura é porque não conseguem. Por exemplo, o Ben Olding é um gajo que é relativamente artístico, faz os jogos, ele tinha jogos com bem mau aspecto, que era ele que fazia a arte, mas ele conseguia fazer tudo. Conseguia fazer animações, conseguia fazer a arte toda, punha aquilo a funcionar. Depois é que começou a achar que se calhar ficava mais bonito se ele contratasse alguém que estivesse mais habituado a fazer arte. E foi aí que mudou, mas sim. Mais alguém? Sim?
Estavas agora a falar da parte de teres o diretor artístico, não é diretor artístico. Como é que tu lidas, no caso de
honestamente, na altura, não estava para me chatear mesmo. Era mesmo isso que acontecia. Depende do que é que eles pedem. Sim. É que, por exemplo, uma empresa das águas municipais, isso é o caso da empresa das águas municipais, águas, que quer o título, a gente faz logo a tipo azul, água, óbvio, e ele, não, mas eu quero vermelho. E porquê? Porque és benfiquista, só por isto, estás a perceber? Por causa daquilo. Não tem nada a ver com o que é que a cor está a transmitir, ou, por exemplo, clínicas que usam o verde e o azul por causa das fardas dos médicos, está aí há uma relação de cromática com o propósito. No caso dessas batalhas que tens de ter, geralmente eu ganho-as quando eles dizem é mais deste estilo, mas eu vou-te preparar um concept e tu vais ver que... Então geralmente eu perco uma horita ou duas a fazer um concept mais castiço, mostro e geralmente consigo convencer os gajos. Quando não consigo, pronto, cobro-me, digo, olha, está bem, mas vai custar tanto, assim qualquer coisa, e tento ir buscar daí também o que te perdes em dignidade, vais encher na carteira, basicamente. Dignidade artística. Estavas a perguntar, desculpa? O parenting é da dependência, repara. Tens aqui, por exemplo, o braço direito. Dentro do braço direito tens a mão direita. Estás a ver? Isto é o suficiente para tu dizeres ao Unity que quando um objeto move, o outro vai ter que ir atrás porque depende dele. É mesmo só isso. Faço o torso, que é a parte que eu vou rodar quando quiser rodar tudo, por exemplo, ou a pélvis. E depois vou fazendo as dependências normais como se fosse um esqueleto. Tá? Não sei se demoramos muito. Demoramos um coto. Ou não? Até que foi uma hora. Thank you.